VUCA Blaster.
Welcome back to VUCA Blaster. I'm Roscoe and a first-time co-host on this podcast. This is a first English edition because together with Manuel, we are very happy and have the pleasure to talk to Jürgen Apello, an entrepreneur, a speaker, a writer of best-selling books, and especially focusing on the topics of pioneering leadership in the 21st century. As Jürgen puts it, I think, very well on his homepage, and this, I think, is really what I like very much. He has very concrete games, tools, approaches to introduce better management with fewer managers. I think this is really a very, very interesting part, and I'm really psyched to get some more insights from Jürgen. Jürgen, anything you want to add at this point for your introduction?
Well, hello, Roscoe. Hello, Manuel. It is important to point out perhaps that I'm actually a software engineer. That's how I was raised, you could say. I studied software engineering at the University in Delft in the Netherlands. But my interests have always been much broader than that. I like marketing too. I like management and leadership. I like finance. I find even interesting, and you name it. So I'm more of a generalist than a specialist.
Thank you very much. I think this will help us also. Manuel, would you just like to start off with your check-in questions to get started?
Yes. So we have three check-ins started to get a little bit more personal questions. So if you don't want to answer, then of course we can skip it, but let's see. So the first question is, what are you thankful for?
What I'm thankful for is that I have a job that allows me to travel around the world and be in other cities across Europe and beyond, and then have a great coffee in coffee bars and think, wow, this is an amazing life that I am living. I'm blessed with the career that I have stumbled upon, because I never really consciously chose this, I think. But yeah, the moments like today when the sun is shining, I'm in Zurich right now in Switzerland, enjoying my time here after 2 days of workshop. And very few people can say that they travel for work and enjoy other cities. That's what I'm thankful for.
Okay, yeah, sounds really great. Thank you for the answer. The second question is, what is success for you?
Gosh, a good question. I suppose success is feeling happy about how you have used your time. I think in the end, what matters not is how much money you've earned or whatever. I think you need to be happy and content with how you spend your most valuable resource on this planet, which is your time. And I am sometimes unhappy about how I have wasted my time, or how I have other people allowed to waste my time. And I think success is getting this under control, that you are content and happy with what you're doing on this planet, and that you can look back at positive experiences with how you've spent your time.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Hope we don't waste your time today in our podcast. So the last question is, how do you deal with obstacles?
I am now reading philosophy books. Started all the way at the beginning, pre-Socrates, and through the various flavors, Stoicism and skepticism and cynicism and you name it. I try to see myself as a Stoic nowadays. I'm learning a lot about that. There's huge overlap with Buddhism, as I understand, and just the way we approach life. It's very much about how to deal with obstacles, how to respond to things that are beyond your control. And that has always been a challenge for me, I can tell you. I easily get agitated when things are not going as I have planned. and that's a learning journey for me. I think I make a little bit of progress, but there's still much to do in that area. So I try to be inspired by Stoicism on how to deal with obstacles. I am in control of my emotions. I am supposed to be in control of my emotions. I am not always, but I need to learn how to deal with that. And I said, okay, well, this is the way things are. I can learn something from the obstacle and enrich myself with the experience. That's a challenge still.
Yeah, thank you very much for the insights. And we want to start with the topic, to dive into the topic. There was a question we also asked the audience, what are your questions to Jürgen? And it was like, what is your opinion on Agile is Dead? Because there's a lot of discussion online. I don't know if you know it, I guess so. So the audience wanted to know what's your opinion on that.
Well, it depends on how you define it. If you define it in the way the Agile Manifesto has defined it, back then in 2001, when 17 guys got together and inspired the world with their insights, then I would say yes, that kind of Agile is dead. They made a very important contribution, but in the way they have defined it, it doesn't scale. And that is the big challenge, because it assumes trust. It assumes respect and psychological safety, and the human mind is not wired to trust 100,000 people. We cannot do that. That is just impossible. We cannot feel psychologically safe in a crowd of 100,000. So Agile as defined, individuals' interactions over process and tools, is simply unscalable. And that was never the intention. I'm not trying to blame them for it. As they said a number of times, we were not trying to solve all the problems in the known universe. They were trying to solve problems with software projects, with the specific customers, small scale, and they did that well. But now we've done that. We know how to do that. We have many organizations in the world able to release many times per day. Been there, done that. Okay, we know how to do this well. For some, it's still a struggle, but we know how to do this. The world has gone agile. No need to talk about that kind of agile. Now, how does it scale? Well, the Agile Manifesto has no answer to that. So from that perspective, I can agree that, yeah, Agile is dead, because we need other answers, other guidance to discuss, okay, how can we work together then with 10,000 Scrum teams? I mean, that somehow requires coordination. there should be some guidance on how to work with larger businesses. And I sometimes see people in the Agile community say things such as don't scale or descale. And I keep saying, well, that's not an answer. There are organizations of 100,000 people. There are products and projects that require thousands of people just to be completed. You cannot say, well, let's just make that 500 Agile teams then. How do they collaborate, those 500 Agile teams? You have not answered the question. So yeah, Agile works. We've done it at small scale. Now, how does that work at scale? That's the answer to the question to answer now. And that we call that business agility nowadays, not capital A Agile. And I understand why some people say Agile is dead. I would say no, Agile is now everywhere. I sometimes compare it with cyber. When I was young, a long time ago, we talked about cyber and cyberspace and everything. And now we have cyber. It's all around us. We are now on cyber. We call it the internet, actually. We changed the word, but it is everywhere. We're not talking about the word cyber anymore. It's a bit old-fashioned to talk about that word. So I also think at some point, us old people will still be using the word agile, But the young generations, they're not even using that word anymore because it's so obvious that you should release software multiple times per week. I mean, who comes up with the idea of doing that once per year? That makes no sense whatsoever. That we had to go through that journey.
And sometimes there's a critique like, it's only nowadays like certificates and more the commercial thing on Agile. Maybe what do you think about that? So is it because everyone wants to do it? Maybe there should be like something like that. So
well, it just shows that there's a need. And whenever there's a need, there will be sellers of snake oil. I totally agree that the famous certification schemes where you purchase one certificate after the other, basically by attending workshops, is not the way to change organizations. I'm not saying that workshops themselves have no use. I'm organizing myself as well. I just did one here in Zurich. I didn't give anyone a certificate because I know this is useless. It makes no sense. It has no value for me. If someone wants a certificate, okay, well, whatever. I'll grab a piece of paper and I'll write something on it for them. I don't believe it's going to make any difference. I'm glad nobody asked for a certificate, by the way. I had very mature people in my workshop. So I do see the value of workshops and getting together and trying things and discussing things, of course, that is interactions and of individuals and interactions over process and people that works. But the certification industry, yes, that is a bit of a pain. You could say it's a parasite, perhaps, to use that kind of language. There is a lot of good stuff happening. That means there's also bad stuff trying to piggyback onto an important movement. And that is what happens with such certification programs that sadly some people buy into, but that's just the way it is.
Thank you for sharing your insights on this. What would you propose would be a better way to introduce agile business agility? What do you think is the most effective way?
Well, people should try things. I think they should not get a badge for sitting in a workshop for 2 days and writing things in a notebook that they then never open again afterwards. That has no value. What has value is if they tried something in the organization and they get a badge for that. So that is, I think, something that we need to solve somehow. I'm thinking myself about how to perhaps pursue this problem with my own work, because I don't want another certification scheme and make the same mistakes that others have made before. I'm not interested in that. I could make money with it, probably, but I would get the same amount of criticism and well-deserved if I went the same route. So I would prefer something else. If I introduce something that, around Unfix, for example, then it should be giving people badges for what they have done in the organization, what they have tried, what their experience is after running an experiment and what they've learned from it. That should be badge worthy. That should get you an experiment and a certificate.
Yes, and as you named, like the Unfix model, so maybe we can dive now inside of it. So maybe you put like the batch thing inside of it, or was it just now here because you say maybe they can get a batch if they practice something good or something? Is it also part of the model?
No, it's at this moment there's no badges or anything yet, but I do like gamification. I do like learning from games why games are fun, why we play games, and copying the useful practices from them. And people like playing games and achieving levels and seeing their competence grow over time and getting then increasingly more challenging quests to solve and whatnot. you can mimic that somehow in organizational settings, I'm pretty sure. But that has been a quest for me for several years already, how to do that in an organizational setting. But I am very much a believer of gamification, because games are about happiness. We literally waste our time on games. They have no benefit whatsoever other than making us happy. And that's the whole point of playing games, whether it is individual or with friends and family or whatnot. And so for me, that's inspirational. I think we should gamify learning and gamify organizational change, but I have not solved that problem yet.
Okay. But I heard also in like another podcast that you compare a little bit unfixed model with Lego. So there is maybe also some parallel on gaming. Maybe you can discuss or describe also for the audience. So what is maybe the unfixed model?
Right. So I started with the observation that pictures are popular, apparently, in our community, whether it is a picture of the scaled agile framework or a large scale scrum or whatever, pictures draw attention. That was one observation. Another one is that in terms of organization design, we do not have a lot to choose from. SAFe has some suggestions on how to structure yourself, but it is not complete. It does not address HR or marketing or finance. So it focuses on product development. That's basically the idea. And then there are others that have a similar approach, whether it's Less or Nexus or Scrum at Scale. It's all about product development. They ignore the rest of the company and are, in my opinion, very weak in terms of organization design. And then we have others such as Holacracy that discuss organization design from a more holistic perspective, but they are so wacky and so extreme that no sensible manager would ever implement something like that. They are too off the rails as far as I'm concerned. And that's basically, those are the options. Oh, and then we have the Spotify model, which was actually a case study that people now use as if it was a framework. Well, it's interesting to be inspired by, but it was 10 years ago and the company has grown 10 times larger since then. And they're not doing what that was described 10 years ago anymore. So those are the best options we have. So I thought, we need something else. That was my observation. The market apparently wants to be inspired by organizational models, how to structure ourselves to answer that question of how do we get those 500 Scrum teams to collaborate with each other, because we are a large organization of 20,000 people or something like that. We need answers to that, and in a way that also addresses marketing and sales and HR and you name it. So I decided, okay, let's go after that. Let's make organization design my thing. Let's create pictures, because people like pictures that draw attention and that helps in terms of visualization. People need that. And what I want to be different from frameworks is the word framework suggests that there is an essential structure. That is the definition of the word framework, that you have something static that you cannot change and that supports everything else. If you remove the framework, then you have no framework anymore if everything is optional. And I do not like that approach. I do not like the idea that you have a minimal set of practices. For me, everything is optional. And that's why I use the metaphor of Lego, because with a Lego box, everything is optional. You begin with a box full of blocks and an empty desk. That's your starting point. And then you grab the blocks that you want and you start building. And the better description then would actually be a pattern library of what Unfix is. It is a collection of good patterns that I found in several sources, and I credit them all. And I leave it to people to start building with the blocks. So Lego is for me a metaphor that helps people understand how to use this model. It is not a framework. People easily, particularly in the Agile community, they call just about everything a framework nowadays, which just means that they don't even understand what the word means. Because many things that they call a framework are not a framework. Some people say the same thing about Management 3.0. Well, that's also not a framework. Nothing is mandatory with Management 3.0. They're just useful practices for managers and leaders. So a pattern library is the better descriptor, in my opinion.
Yes, and I guess in organization, there's not like a blueprint you can put on every organization. It's more like you pick whatever you need, or maybe your employees need. And it's also like an unfix. So you collect maybe the Lego bricks like you need for your organization, and maybe some you don't need, and you just pick them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And one well-known pattern is, of course, the value stream team, whether it is a Scrum team or Kanban team or feature team or Agile team, it doesn't matter what you call them. It is the same pattern as far as I'm concerned. And I call that the value stream crew. Actually, I like the word crew because it signals that this is a team with a mission, that they're going from one place to the other to get something done. But team is also a fine word if that's what you prefer. And that's just one very common pattern, at least in the Agile community. We know this pattern. There are other patterns as well, facilitation crew and platform crew and governance crew and others. And it is up to you to combine them in such a way that they make sense for you. But the Lego blocks come with constraints. Like you know from Lego, you cannot put them together in any way, random way. They only fit in a certain way, fit together in a certain manner. That is by design. That is why it is also fun to play with it. And the same applies to unfix. It is by design that you cannot just make everything with it. I don't want people to create traditional companies with it. That is not allowed. That is not the idea. You should make modern businesses with the practices, the patterns of the future, not of the past.
And as you mentioned upfront, the challenge of scaling is one which is probably still existing. If you look at the unfix model, how does this actually fit in the question of scaling up?
So good question. I actually sort of divided the problem in two. There's one very important pattern that I call the base. You could call it the tribe or the business unit. I actually borrowed that from the Spotify model, where they also have a tribe concept. It does not really exist in other models. It is not exactly the same as an art in the scaled Agile framework, for example, because in SAFe, they assume that an art creates one thing together with multiple teams. But if you have tiny products, you don't need SAFe. You just have four individual teams doing four individual Scrum projects, but you would still benefit from having a base, as I call it, a tribe, something that people feel they belong to. So those four individual Scrum teams, they would benefit from feeling part of a larger tribe, a base, as they also say in the Spotify model. So I agree with that, because we need a sense of belonging. We need that sense of psychological safety and recognition, and it doesn't scale. So I say anything in the base is the stuff that we do traditionally with Agile as defined in the Agile manifesto. It doesn't scale. It scales up to the boundaries of the base of that tribe. We know how to do that. But if your company exists of 10,000 people, you're going to need multiple bases. And each base could be organized on the inside in a very different way, with different combinations of Scrum teams or Kanban teams or whatever you prefer. It depends on their objectives, on their jobs. And then the question is, how do those bases work together. And that is interesting because then you have similar patterns. You still have value streams of multiple bases, for example. You can have a facilitation cluster of multiple bases, etc. But probably you're going to need some rules and tools and procedures for having them work together, because that's a lot of people. They will have to rely more on defined procedures and processes for how to work together. I know one company that I often mention, which is Hire company in China that I visited a good number of years ago. They have 4,000 micro enterprises. Imagine that, 4,000 of these bases. And each one is about 15 people on average. So you can imagine within such a micro enterprise, within those 15 people, they can be agile as in the Agile Manifesto. But among the 4,000 micro enterprises, they do contracting. I assure you, they sign contracts with each other. They have to. Because you cannot just do everything in a self-organized anarchistic way across 80,000 people. That doesn't work. So that's how you split the two, right? Within the base or the tribe, microenterprise, you have agile, the traditional sense. That's where the Agile Manifesto applies, individual interactions over process tools, et cetera, et cetera. Beyond the base level, you're going to deal with people you never knew before, that you don't necessarily trust immediately, because they're from a completely different part of the company, maybe even another country or whatever. So you need a more formal approach. But interestingly enough, the patterns are very similar across that boundary. And that's why I call it a fractal model, because the same patterns repeat themselves at the next level up.
Which I think is also a typical systemic concept, right? That the patterns definitely reproduce themselves also on different levels. I like this very much, especially because I know that one of our businesses segments overall in our company, we have over 100,000 employees. One of our segments, I think around 20,000 people, try to or are introducing the, I'll call it the Spotify model, more or less, with maybe slight adjustments, and exactly are struggling or were struggling quite a bit with the topic of scaling, and you know, have exactly this thought. And I like the way they introduce it with the top, with the board being really involved, really, you know, going on the journey, change starting with me, basically this idea in the head of the board, and transferring it to the corporate part of the segment, but really going into the depth and really to let me see even the blue collar. This is something which I think, at least from my observations, did not work very well. Do you have examples maybe or recommendations what could help? And does it even make sense to maybe even go on a blue collar level in production or similar settings?
Well, to be honest, my frame of reference is companies such as Hire and Pipedrive and others that of the last one, I have a case study written where they have, again, tribes, as I suggest, they call them tribes, I call them bases, but it's the same thing. I am pretty much convinced that the same principles apply everywhere. I just do not have experience with what, as you said, blue collar work. I mean, I'm a tech person. That's where I am from. I'm a software engineer. I work with agile coaches and consultants who are my clients, and they work with software engineering projects and products. So that is the context that I operate in. But that being said, I do believe that it applies elsewhere, because nothing in the patterns suggests software per se. I do believe, however, that the combination of the building blocks will be very different in different contexts. So, for example, I use as an analogy sometimes the airline industry or hospitals or fire departments to show that reteaming is a normal thing in other industries. And it's something that we are in the Agile community still a bit scared of. traditionally, we have always said, don't change your teams because your velocity will drop. It will hurt. It will hurt your throughput and everything. And I said, well, in other industries, they do this all the time, reteaming, and they figured out how to do it. So instead of saying, don't do it, maybe we should just learn how to do it so we can enjoy the benefits of reteaming, because there are quite some benefits. And there are companies who have done this now. They do this at Redgate Software. They do this at Pipedrive. There's even an agile framework, the FAST framework, where they use an open space kind of principle to let people flock towards the sprint goals. And every sprint, the teams are different. They make it work. So, but it took us 20 years to figure out that reteaming can actually made to work in the agile community as well. And that's something that already exists in other industries. So that's, as an example, I'm just showing you this, that the patterns translate across industry boundaries, I'm pretty sure. It's just the combination of the building blocks will be different. Like, you can use the same building blocks to build spaceships and to build castles. Those are the same blocks. The picture is completely different. So that depends on the context, what you want to make out of it. It depends on the function, but the patterns, the building blocks are the same.
I like that idea very, very much. And a question which comes to mind is, especially based on your experience going through over the whole world to implement this idea or these thoughts and these approaches, what kind of influence from cultures do you actually see? Are they very big? Is there maybe some cultures which are maybe more, which maybe work on this kind of approach easier or have maybe more challenges or difficulties? What are your experience in this regard?
Well, I always say that geographical culture or regional culture is just one dimension of culture. We also have professional culture. We have industry culture. It makes quite a difference whether you work in the banking industry or whether you work in the media industry. Those are completely different worlds. And I think a bank in Germany versus a bank in Brazil are much more similar to each other than a bank in Germany versus a media company in Germany, right? Because that's the industry dimension of culture, which has much more an impact on organizational change and people's behaviors. So let's not forget about that. But of course, there is a geographical dimension for sure. And there's a ton of research into that. We know about power distance being lower in the northwestern European countries compared to east and south, things like that. We know that the social dimension is bigger in the far east of the world compared to the individualism in Europe and the US. These are known things. Yes, they have an impact on how organizations change, but the details I'm not familiar with, because I'm not a coach or consultant. I don't go into organizations to help them change. I leave that to others. My clients actually are coaches and consultants usually. I am the one who flies at the 30,000 feet view, as I often say. I see the more abstract patterns that sort of apply everywhere, because ultimately we're all human beings. Ultimately we're emotional, very irrational animals, and the differences are in the details, as far as I'm concerned, from that high level that I am looking at things.
And yes, if there is, like, maybe from the audience, someone who wants to put this unfixed model in their organization, how could they start something? Maybe just contact you, or I don't know.
Yeah, well, there is a website, unfixed.work, where you find everything. There's a community. That we have a Miro board with the elements, the patterns that you can use to start drawing things as a PowerPoint template and individual images, et cetera, et cetera. So you can do drawing. And that's what I suggest as a starting point. Just start drawing things. You don't have to change anything. Just make pictures of how the future could be. And that is very similar to what they call scenario planning in business strategy, right? You envision multiple futures and say, well, we could go in this direction, it could go in that direction, maybe have 3, 4, 5 potential pictures of how the organization could work, built with the unfixed building blocks, the patterns. And that's your starting point to have that conversation. What are the things that will have to change? And then you will probably see that some changes will be easier than others. It is pretty easy to start a forum or a guild compared to moving managers out of teams, for example, which requires HR to be involved. And requires people giving up territories and stuff. So it's probably not the best starting point. I advise against having a manager on a Scrum team, for example. The whole Agile community seems to be against that concept, and I agree with that, because you then have a territory, and managers have territories, and they don't easily like to give them up. So it makes it hard to change things when you have territories that people try to protect. But if you have that, then yeah, you'll have to do something about it, and that might be hard. So start with another pattern that is easier. And you mentioned the Spotify model earlier. There are similarities, of course, but one big difference is the matrix structure, which is embedded in the Spotify model. It has these the chapters, with the chapter leads, who are by default the managers of all the engineers in their chapter, and at the same time those engineers also discuss products with product owners, and then you have sort of two people to talk to throughout the week or the month, and that is a matrix organization that can lead to problems. Organization design literature is full of warnings against matrix structures. They lead to big fat middle management layers. They lead to more escalations bubbling up the hierarchy, because the managers, the line managers, and the product managers cannot agree on a solution of someone's availability, and then things bubble up. It's a pain at some point. Not everyone struggles with it. I have seen some companies that are doing well with a matrix, and then in that case I would say, well, don't change a working program if it works for you. Fine, but I foresee that this could become an issue when you get larger, because when the matrix gets larger horizontally and vertically, if you double the number of people, you quadruple the number of connections between them in the matrix. And that is an issue in matrix structure. So that is difficult to solve, actually. That is painful if you want to change that. That is probably not a starting point. Probably you want to start somewhere else, changing, introducing the ideas.
And is it, as you said, like maybe it's more easy to start with a guild or something? So would you also say, like, if we organization want to change something, and maybe until the unfixed model, to start small or to experiment a little bit? I don't know.
I always suggest that's from systems theory, complexity science. You cannot make a large complex system from scratch. You have to start all over and begin with a small system that works, and then steadily grow it over time. It's the same with organization design changes. I just discussed it earlier today on another webinar about change management in general. You'll need to start with the low-hanging fruit, small changes, then gradually build up over time. And then, yes, a guild is a relatively painless thing to begin with. I mean, just get people together across different teams and have them have a conversation over a coffee, preferably outside of the office in another environment, so that it's easier to share opinions and thoughts and perspectives. And an unfixed guild or forum would be a great Beginning, I suppose, where people discuss what could the organization look like? What would be necessary to turn this into a base instead of a matrix? What different small steps would that require? That would be my definitely my suggestion.
And maybe you also then catch the employees, because I see it, and maybe I'm wrong, but I always see like in change projects, there is they change a lot, the structure, whatever, but they have like a big strategy, and in the end they see like, okay, but we didn't put the execution thing or the employees inside of it, so yeah. We don't take them with us.
I think organization restructuring also benefits from experiments. And as far as I understand, even that big Chinese company Hire, that is famous for firing thousands of managers, middle managers, and basically requiring them to become a manager of a micro enterprise or find a job somewhere else. That's what they did like 10 plus years ago. They began with experiments. They first tried things at a small scale to see how this would work and then what would be the feedback before doing a big rollout across the entire organization. They were quite certain, I'm pretty sure, once they did that, that they had a solution that would work at scale. As some say, nail it before you scale it. So you have to nail it at with one base, have one tribe operate like that, get some experience from it, and then do it with two others. And when you have three that are working that, like that successfully, you can start speeding things up.
I thought that maybe Roscoe would want to ask something, but so yes, it was because also it was, but I guess you already answered it, that maybe unfixed it is only for big companies, or could it, so for the whole company, but also maybe for smaller units or teams maybe, but I guess you said like you can build up firstly the baseline somehow.
You can start anywhere. If you have a startup of just five people, you have a starting point. You have just one team of founders who hopefully try not to become a traditional hierarchy once they have a success and start scaling things up. They want to prevent things from becoming fixed. That's why I call it unfixed, to keep things flexible. And so that it applies to them as well. You begin with one team and then you have the building blocks for growing things larger. And then you'll have a base at some point of maybe, I don't know, 50 people. At some point you need to decide, okay, we'll need a second base. And then these will have to coordinate things with each other. And then we'll have five of them. And hopefully that scales out horizontally instead of vertically. That is the idea. So it is not only a solution, I hope, for large enterprises. It is an easier solution even for the startups and scale-ups who do not have legacy structure to get rid of, but they just want to prevent becoming a dinosaur with their organization design. I hope some are going to use Unfix for that as well.
Maybe just one more question around this, because I like this very much. And for people who really want to get started, which source, which book, which video, what would you say is the best thing to get started and get more familiar with the Unfix model? Where would you recommend to start?
Well, the website, because there is no book at this point. I just began half a year ago, and there's a lot of information on the blog, So web pages and the blog posts is what I have now, and presentations that are available in some places, also in the community. There's information available in the circle, community circle. So that's the starting point. And hopefully at some point in the future, there will be a book. That would be nice. But for now, I just focus on the short-term stuff, on blog posts and presentation, podcasts, obviously. That's my focus for now.
And are there already some companies applied this model in there?
There are quite a few I hear that are playing with it, that are drawing pictures. But considering that I just launched the website in January this year, and we are now 5 months further, it is far too early to say that this or that company has transformed successfully with Unfix. That is probably going to change, to take a while longer. For now, what I do is I look at some existing companies with case studies, and I describe what they have already been doing. So, for example, Pipedrive is a company in Tallinn, Estonia, and they reached out to me and said, hey, what you described with Unfix is almost exactly what we have already been doing for several years. And then I interviewed 5 people, and indeed, it's super inspiring and super fun to see, to recognize the patterns. They just have other words for them. They call them tribes. I call them bases. They call them mission teams. I call them value stream crews. But it's the same what they're doing. And other companies have reached out to me in a similar way that, well, this is actually 80% of what we are doing over here. And we're super happy with that. So, and that's sort of obvious, because I have not invented anything. I've just borrowed practices, good practices from other sources, and other people have already found the same ones and applied them. And I'm only the first one to collect them in a picture and give them nice colors and give them a name to make it easier for others to start doing the same thing. So that's the best that we have at this point. Companies out there are already sort of more or less doing something like this. They never called it Unfix because it didn't exist 5 months before 5 months ago. But they had the same insights, and they're very happy with what they have built with those individual patterns and building blocks.
Okay. Oh, Oscar, do you have another question, or otherwise we should come slowly to the end? So maybe an ending question is, if the listeners need to only remember one thing out of this conversation, what should it be? What should they take away from that?
It's like Lego. It's not a framework. People keep saying, oh yeah, tell me more about that Unfix framework. It is not a framework. It's a pattern library. We should try to get rid of that word, as far as I'm concerned. That is, I find that important. Individual patterns, you do the mixing and the matching to make sense, to make something that makes sense in your context, but all the individual parts are optional. You can start with a blank slate, an empty table, and then pick patterns from the box to your liking.
Okay. Yeah, then thank you very much, and for the really inspiring talk. And yeah, then have a nice day, and thank you for being in our podcast.
Thank you, Manuel. Thanks, Roscoe. It's been a pleasure.
And have a nice day.